Special funding for the podcast of On Point is provided by Boston University School of Law, dedicated to excellence in teaching and to preparing our graduates to hit the ground running.
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It's been a big year for Alaska these last 12 months. For many in the lower 48, snowy notions of polar bears and pipelines were replaced by wall-to-wall coverage of candidate Sarah Palin and now convicted Alaska Senator Ted Stevens. The cherry on top, this month, Alaskans celebrate 50 years of U.S. statehood. We're headed north to check it out. This hour on Point, salmon, moose, bear, pipeline, politics, and the state of Alaska at 50. We'll be joined later this hour by Alaska's senior senator, Lisa Murkowski. Phone in with a question and Alaska. Joining me first today from Fairbanks is Dermot Cole. He's been writing about life in Alaska as a columnist for the Fairbanks Daily News Miner for years now. He's seen it all. His new book is North to the Future, The Alaska Story, 1959 to 2009. Dermot Cole, welcome back to On Point.
Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. And with us from Anchorage, Alaska, is Willie Hensley. He's a longtime activist for Native Alaskans, a former Alaska state legislator, and an Inupiat tribal elder. He founded the Northwest Alaska Native Association in 1966 and spent 10 years as a representative and senator in the Alaska state legislature. He just retired last year from a 10-year stint as manager of federal relations for the Alyeska Pipeline Service Company. His new book is 50 Miles from Tomorrow, a memoir of Alaska and the real people. Willie Hensley, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
You know, I'm looking at the pictures in your book, Willie, to when you were growing up, and we've got real old-time Alaska here, nothing like 2009. We've got sealskin boots and tar paper shacks, and you and your family out sort of peeling whale skin off with a knife for a little nice chew in the summertime. Long time since then, Willie.
Oh, there's been a world of change, that's for sure.
Is the Alaska you grew up in as a Native American there on the Kotzebue on the coast, is it still there or is it gone?
Oh, it's still there. I mean, there's just a lot of changes since, changes in technology and transportation and communications, but we still love the traditional foods and the traditional lifestyle, but it's a lot different than it was back then.
What about you, from the Native Alaskan perspective? Are you glad to be celebrating 50 years as an American state? Were you happy for statehood?
Well, I was actually probably one of the few that's around today that was in Alaska at the time the Senate passed the legislation back in 58. I happened to be going through Fairbanks on the way to back to Kotzebue after boarding school in Tennessee, the one and only time I came home in 4 years.
You'd been sent off as a program of educating Indians, Native Americans.
Yeah, and actually, I didn't realize that what the legislation actually did was create this giant conflict over who owned Alaska. And that's basically what I got involved with 7 years later when I was at the University of Alaska, that the land rights of Native people had not been resolved, and yet the state was going to be allowed to select over 100 million acres of land. And, of course, that eventually got resolved. But there I was joining in the parade in Fairbanks, you know, not really knowing what I was celebrating.
We'll look at that conflict because it's been a huge piece of the story of Alaska statehood. Of course, more than a quarter of the state carved out a chunk bigger than California and given to the state as its property, 100 million-plus acres, as you say. There's a big story in that. Dermot Cole, this last year, 2008, has been one of huge exposure for Alaska via Ted Stevens and Sarah Palin and all the rest. What are you thinking about the picture the lower 48 has of your state in this 50th anniversary year of statehood?
Well, this has certainly been the most tumultuous year politically for Alaska in decades. I think the only thing that really compares to it is 1968, when Ted Stevens became our United States Senator. And it's interesting that today Mark Begich is replacing Ted Stevens in the U.S. Senate. He's only the seventh Alaskan to serve in the U.S. Senate.
This is the former mayor of Anchorage who's stepping in as Ted Stevens carries his convictions off into the sunset for now.
That's correct. And one of the interesting things about this is how Ted Stevens is viewed in Alaska and outside, which is the term that people in Alaska use for the other states. Stevens is not Steve Stevens was regarded fondly by many people here, and I guess a testament to that is that he almost won the election despite being convicted. Many of his supporters regard his conviction as somewhat of a paperwork violation. On the other hand, his support used to be overwhelming, and he did lose quite a bit of that backing because of the ethical controversy surrounding his dealings with an oil field services company, and perhaps he was too close to the lobbyists and did some things he probably shouldn't have done. Anyway, with Ted Stevens and Sarah Palin, this has been a year of exposure, both favorable and unfavorable for Alaska. At the moment, many people believe that Sarah Palin has her eyes on higher office, so I think they're not really sure what to make of her returning to Alaska as governor, if she's going to be focused on being governor or if her attention is running for president in 4 years.
Willie Hensley, how do you look at Sarah Palin and how she and her massive exposure in the fall after she became John McCain's running mate, how she put a face on Alaska to the whole country, to the world? Was that a welcome face for Alaska in your view, Willie, or something else?
Well, you know, Alaska is a small place people-wise, and so we all know one another. We know one another's relatives, and sometimes we're actually related. And, you know, I roomed with Nick Begich, you know, the father of the incoming senator when I was in the legislature.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've all been very, very close, Senator Stevens, former Governor Hickel. And there are many aspects to Alaskan society. And I think Alaskans initially were quite taken with the notion of our governor being a candidate for vice president. And in a way, I think the novelty kind of wore off a little bit because there were just some aspects of the portrayal of Alaska that just didn't go over very well with Alaskans. And so we kind of wanted her back home to kind of focus on Alaska and our issues, and we're actually happy to have her back.
What aspects of the way Alaska got portrayed were Alaskans not happy with? Was it the sort of Wasilla hillbilly?
Yeah, kind of that
characterization.
You know, actually, you know, Wasilla is not Alaska per se. I mean, there's
wait a minute.
There's some Wasilla-like places, but you know, we have 200 other villages scattered around the state with some wonderful people. And that sort of a hillbilly quality that kind of emerged was, you know, not exactly the image I think that you know, Alaskans perceive. I mean, we are tough, we are individualistic. You know, Fairbanks, in particular, where Dermot's from. You know, I was there in the 60s when it was minus 60 below for like 3 weeks one winter, and I decided
minus
to go south to go to school.
What is it today, Dermot?
It's minus 40 as we speak.
That's pretty well down there. That's pretty well down. What do you think? Is your sense that Sarah Palin was treated fairly? Did it give Alaska kind of a reputational black eye, or did it make it look, you know, feisty and independent, as many Alaskans are?
Well, my own view of this is, you know, as on many other things, I can look at it two ways. One, she was... she did pretty well considering she was plucked out of nowhere and into the national spotlight and was totally unprepared for it. On the other hand, she was totally unprepared for it, and that showed in the campaign. The portrayal of Alaska, it's always difficult to explain Alaska to the rest of the country. As Willie just said,
yes.
Wasilla is not an accurate representation of Alaska any more than... Fairbanks is, but it is, it's part of the total. I mean, Alaska is twice the size of Texas, so you have to really be careful in generalizing.
Twice the size of Texas with only a population of 700 and some thousand.
Right. The population of what would be a small city in the lower 48, and, you know, it's, from where I sit, it's more than 700 miles to the state capital, and, The the variety that you find in Alaska is its essential quality. That's the probably the most important thing to the people who live here.
You know, it's funny, Dermot. I was reading your biography. You showed up in Alaska in 1974 at 21. I showed up the same year as 18. At 18, part of that huge wave of people coming up to work on the pipeline. You stayed, my friend, and you've got the stories in the 40-degree below weather to tell for it. You made it your home.
Yeah, I really love I love living here, and as Willie knows, if you need to learn to love wintertime. And so if you learn to love wintertime, psychologically, you can adapt very well to it, as his people have for you know, thousands of years.
We've got a lot to look at here in terms of climate change, politics, Sarah Palin, and much more in the 50th anniversary year of Alaska's statehood. Dermot Cole in Fairbanks, Willie Hensley, please stand by in Anchorage. When we come back, we'll be joined by Alaskan U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
To Alaska, I go north, the rush is on, way up north, way up north. North to Alaska, I go north, the rush is on. North to Alaska, I go north, the rush is on.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about the state of Alaska at 50. Alaska 50 years after it formally gained statehood, January 3rd, 1959. We've been talking with Willie Hensley, longtime Native Alaskan activist, former Alaska lawmaker, and Inupiat elder. He joins us from Anchorage, Alaska. His memoir is 50 Miles From Tomorrow, A Memoir of Alaska and the Real People. From Fairbanks, we've been joined by Dermot Cole, longtime columnist for the Fairbanks Daily News Miner, out with the new book, North to the Future, The Alaska Story, 1959 to 2009. And right now from Washington, D.C., we're joined by the Republican Senator from Alaska, Lisa Murkowski, now senior Senator Senator Murkowski, appointed to replace her father, Frank Murkowski, in 2002. After he vacated his seat to become Alaska's governor, she was elected to a full term in 2004. Lisa Murkowski, Senator Murkowski, thanks very much for joining us.
Good to be with you, Tom. It's great to be talking about Alaska statehood.
How is your state doing at 50? You know, we a lot of political turmoil in the last year, a lot of questions around the country, at least, around the climate and environment, and many see Alaska as on the front line of that. How would you describe the health of Alaska, Senator?
Well, I would say that in terms of its economic health, Alaska is robust. We, partly because of our geography, but other factors as well, we have not been hit by some of the economic downturn that the rest of the country has seen.
How about that oil downturn from $144 a barrel to 30 something recently?
That obviously has an impact and something that we watch very, very carefully. But we continue to see a level of production that, while it's on the decline, it still helps to sustain our state's budget. But we are very cognizant of the fact that as the prices of oil go down, that directly impacts us as a state. Great deal of attention that is paid to how we might diversify as a state from one that is based on the traditional fossilized fuels to a world of renewable energy and the opportunities that present themselves there. We've got money in the bank as a result of our permanent fund.
$29 billion.
$29 billion. It was close to 40 before the downturn in the markets.
Oops.
But it is a savings account that is the envy of the other states.
And Alaskan gets a payout every year from the income to that fund, as I understand.
There is a dividend that is paid out to every Alaskan. And it was a concept that came about 25 years ago when our political leaders determined that Alaskans who have a stake in what is going on with their government will perhaps pay more attention to it. Alaskans who have a stake in what's going on with the budget matters will pay more attention to it.
But what about your state without the seniority of Senator Ted Stevens, who lost his bid for reelection after those convictions that everybody knows about? He brought home a lot of bacon over the years, up to and almost including the famous Bridge to Nowhere. Does Ted Stevens' departure mean that Alaska's traditional relationship with federal largesse is over? Do you have to live without it or go on a diet?
Well, Senator Stevens has been an incredible leader for the state of Alaska for over four decades. And not only has he brought back federal revenues, but he has helped to put in place legislation, laws that have helped to build the state and that will allow it to be sustainable for decades in the future. We do recognize that with an economic downturn and an increasing deficit, that returns to all the states are going to be diminished. But I think it's fair to say that Senator Stevens put us on a good path as a state to be more independent. And I and the new senator-elect will be working hard to make sure that Alaska's infrastructure is built along with that of the rest of the country. Tall order, but I think thanks to Senator Stevens, we have so much of that groundwork that has been laid.
Willie Hensley, you know Alaska and Washington pretty well. Do you think Lisa Murkowski, Senator Murkowski, has a hope of bringing home the kind of bacon that Ted Stevens did, or do you think Alaska has to maybe tighten its belt now?
Well, I suspect maybe the entire country might have to tighten its belt some. We don't have, the money in the bank, so to speak, that was there when Clinton left office. But Senator Stevens, I've known him since the early 60s when he first ran. Known Congressman Young, we served together, served with Stevens. Like I said earlier, this is a small state people-wise, and I think Senator Murkowski and Senator Begich, I think they'll do a fine job of taking care of Alaska, and like she says, we have the good fortune of having the permanent fund, and some options that the people of Alaska can utilize in the future to take care of our needs.
Senator Murkowski, we've got listeners with questions for you. Let me turn to one. Dana in Dennis, Massachusetts. Dana, you're on the air with Senator Lisa Murkowski of Alaska.
Hello, Tom.
Hi.
One thing I'm concerned about, especially in light of Sarah Palin and Ted Stevens and their policies, I'm concerned about the Alaskan wilderness and its preservation in perpetuity as long as the universe allows. But I really don't ever want, with our vanishing wilderness, and especially in the main, the 48,
mm-hmm.
the lower, I really don't want to see that wilderness vanish. I may visit it someday, I may not, but that doesn't matter. It must be preserved. I really feel that wildlife habitat should be preserved. It's priceless. You can't put any amount on it. It's a God-given treasure, so to speak, and I really want to see it preserved. That's my main concern about Alaska.
Dana, let us take it up with the Senator. Lisa Murkowski, you must hear that a lot from Americans in the lower 48 looking up at your great big state. How do you hear that? Do you welcome it, or is that an imposition in your view?
No, absolutely not an imposition at all. And I would welcome Dana and any others to the state to see the incredible land that we have. I think one thing that people may not recognize is that we have preserved in the state of Alaska incredible expanses of wilderness. Land that is designated as wilderness. We have more wilderness designated in the state of Alaska than the entire country. And so to suggest that, well, somehow or other that the Alaskans are going to abuse this and there will be no wilderness opportunity, you need to, again, appreciate it has been, this land has been designated by Congress, by executive act, as wilderness, and it is in such status that it will remain that
way. But you've got wilderness and oil. Are you worried about global warming and the health of that those Alaskan lands that you're rightfully proud of?
Well, I think we all are very cognizant of the impacts of climate change. We see it firsthand in Alaska with additional erosion to our coastal areas. We're seeing the impacts in our fisheries in vegetation. It is real, and it's something that we are working here in Congress to make sure that we are acting responsibly. But I think you also need to appreciate that while we may be producers of oil and other energy sources in Alaska, we're working very hard to make sure that any development, whether it's up north or in our Cook Inlet, is done responsibly. The environmental protections and considerations that are put in place in Alaska are more rigorous than anywhere else in the country, anywhere else, I would say, in the world. And yet we are still able to produce a resource that this country most clearly needs.
Senator Lisa Murkowski, Republican senator from Alaska, now senior senator from Alaska. Senator, I know we have to let you go. Thanks very much for joining us today.
It was good to be with you, Tom. Thank you.
Dermot Cole, Willie Hensley, stand by. Let's get a call here from Harrisonburg, Virginia, and Michelle. Michelle, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I have a story to tell you. When I was in college, my friends and I drove the Alcan Highway, which goes from Montana or something to Alaska, 1,700 miles of mud road in a Toyota Camry. And we camped every night while truckers were passing us by on the road.
Yeah.
And gas stations were really few and far between, so we come up to this one gas station, and the man pumping the gas says, "Oh, yeah, I heard you were coming." We said, "Who?" He says, "Well, 3 days ago, a trucker passed by and said, some Virginians are coming up the road." So, Alaska was that kind of a state.
That's a terrific. When was it?
In the
70s. And did your Toyota Camry survive that mud and gravel on the way to Alaska?
Parts of it did.
Yeah,
the windshield did not.
Parts of it, no doubt. Michelle, thanks for calling. Let me get one from Royalton, Vermont. Malcolm, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. I actually moved to Alaska in September from Vermont, and I too drove up the Alcan Highway, but a couple things struck me about Alaska. One is just the size of nature there is immense. Coming from the East Coast, I never realized a mountain could look so big and be so big. And that's apparent even from Anchorage. I mean, you just look off to the east, and there's this gigantic mountain range right there.
Mm-hmm.
But also, I think people's impression of Alaska is sort of being politically polarized and very different from Vermont. And I was surprised at how similar it is.
Malcolm, why have you moved up to Alaska? What are you going to do up there?
I took a job. I actually work in the court system up there.
And are you prepared for all those long, dark months of cold winter?
You know, it's funny. I at one point in time, I lived in Buffalo, New York, and the weather and climate had much more of an impact on my mood than it does in Alaska. The days may be short in the winter, but when the sun comes out, lighting up an incredibly breathtaking landscape, and it hasn't bothered me at all yet. And Vermont certainly prepared me for the cold. So.
Well, good luck with it, Malcolm. Thanks for calling. Let me get one more call here, and we'll go back to Alaska. John in Barrie, Vermont. You're on the air.
Greetings, Senator. Greetings, Tom. I worked as a fish and game warden 20 years ago, 1980. That's more than 20 years ago.
Yeah.
In Alaska, and it's very tough people, very pioneering, wonderful people, a lot of iconoclasts, a lot of native people from the streets of New York City and going to Princeton University and then becoming a fish and game warden and dealing with grizzlies and having to arrest people who would come in and fish when this and shoot when it's not. And everybody carries a gun. And it was like Wild West of the Pecos. But you're right about the, can you handle the winter? Can you handle the darkness? No, I couldn't. But I also agree that it should be preserved. It was a wonderful, incredible photographic aesthetic. I paint paintings. It's a lovely place. It should not be strip mined or oiled or plummeted for...
It's pretty remarkable. No question about it. John, thanks for bringing those memories back to mind. Dermot Cole, let me put the same question to you. The attitude from the lower 48 of wanting to preserve Alaska. Do Alaskans, I realize that's a broad word, but is that widely appreciated or is that seen as an imposition?
Well, it's a tough question to answer. As in every place else in the country, you'll find a divided views on this. A couple of things to point out, however, is that the size of the federal landmass in Alaska is immense. I mean, the federal lands alone would be greater than the states of Washington, Oregon, and California. And it's maybe the scope of this state that's probably the hardest thing to convey up to people. In Alaska, there is a widespread view that people in the other states don't... are trying to impose their views on the people who live in Alaska. That is not a universally held view, but I'd say it's a majority view. One aspect I'd like to bring up, though, on this, is that since we have Willie Hensley on the line, he's really one of the key figures who brought to light the notion that after Alaska became a state, one of the things left unsettled and unresolved was the status of the ownership of Alaska's land. And in fact, it was a paper that Willie wrote in 1966 at a university course that helped really invigorate the movement that led to the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. And that really had a huge impact on today's economy because Alaska Native corporations formed under that act really are now an immense part of the state's daily business life and cultural life. But Alaska Native corporations own more than 40 million acres of land, and it's I'll just go back to that. It's the scope of Alaska that's really hard to convey.
40 million acres carved out for Native American interests, and we've got Willie Hensley with us who helped, was absolutely critical at the beginning of making that happen. We'll come back and talk about that and much more. Dermot Cole in Fairbanks, Willie Hensley in Anchorage. We're so glad you're with us. 40 below today in Fairbanks, where Dermot Cole sits. We'll go out with well-known singer-songwriter Jewel right here, raised outside of Homer, Alaska. Her grandfather, Yule Kilcher, was a state senator, helped draft the state's constitution. Here she is singing You Were Meant for Me. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
It made me miss you. Oh, so bad, 'cause dreams last so long. Hey, that after you're gone, I know that you love me, and so you will see. You're meant for me, and I was meant for you.
Joined today from Anchorage, Alaska, by Willie Hensley, longtime Native Alaskan activist, an elder in the Inupiat tribe there, author of 50 Miles from Tomorrow, and from Fairbanks, Alaska, by Dermot Cole, columnist for the Fairbanks Daily News Miner. Bill's calling from Bethlehem, Connecticut. Bill, you're on the air. Hi.
Tom, thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What do you know?
I've been to Alaska several times. I spent a summer up there also, and it's a beautiful state. I've been all over the state. Not all over, but I've been in a lot of parts of the state for the first time. My biggest concern and worry is the wild salmon stocks. Alaska, I feel, is the last place that has enormous wild salmon stocks. And I've seen since the 80s the decrease of these wild salmon stocks in many places of Alaska. And the tides have been going up in the 80s, the 90s, and this past few years.
And you see a big difference, Bill? You see a big difference?
I have. in the wild salmon stocks I have, in a lot of the rivers where they've been less fish, or they put more limits on them, which I believe they should. So that's my biggest worry. I don't think they're protected enough. I think the state of Alaska and the United States should do more to save those wild salmon stocks and make them where they were, like in the 1950s, 1940s.
Well, that would be sweet. Let us pick it up. Thanks for your call, Bill. Willie Hensley, how about it? I never salmon fished in Alaska, but I do remember up on the north coast, east of Prudhoe Bay, out by Flaxman Island, up, right up near Anwar, working there. Gee, in the summer after the ice would go out on Beaufort Sea, and the Arctic char were so thick coming into those tidal pools on that big coast with the caribou flowing by, you could practically walk on the char there. What about Alaska's river fisheries, its ocean fisheries, in particular its salmon, Willie? How are they doing?
Actually, nature kind of comes and goes. I mean, same with the caribou. There are some years when they are very, very, very extensive, other times when, the population goes down. Actually, we have a very, very vigorous management program, both with the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council that handles, the offshore fisheries, but we also have a very strong fish and game department. And so they keep a very, very close eye on the salmon fisheries. And so you might have some stocks that are down some years, others that are up other years. And so Alaska is very, very vast, and we have, I think, in comparison to other parts of the country, some tremendous fish and wildlife resources. And, of course, fisheries was the mainstay of our economy back in the territorial days, and still is to some extent, but it's been eclipsed, of course, by oil.
But, Willie, you grew up 20, 30 miles north of the Arctic Circle in Kotzebue.
Yes.
There, right on the coast. Lots of Native Alaskans live on the coast and depend on fisheries. Yes. I mean, people, you may have a great fish and wildlife service, but if you've got climate change, that's a different scale of problem, isn't it? Do you see climate change impacting the Alaskan populations, the coast, your own family and relatives and fellow tribe members?
Well, actually, there are reports, of the effects of global warming. And, of course, there is concern because our people still depend a great deal on sea mammals, on fisheries. And with potential traffic coming through the Northwest Passage, I think there are those concerns that people have up there, particularly those in the whaling communities.
I'm looking here again at this picture of you. You look like you must be 8 or 9 in your book, Willie. It's 1947 or 48. Our caller, Bill, says he wishes fish stocks were again like they were then. And you're sitting in front of a tar paper house on the beach, I'd say, in Kotzebue.
Oh, yes. I know the beach very well.
And you're having there's the drying rack there. It looks like whale skin on it. And you're cutting off some, beluga meat there, muktuk, whale skin. Take us back to that. You got sealskin boots on. What was that environment like?
Well, actually, like I said, it was almost in a different world back then. The front street of Kotzebue was the beach, pretty much. Mm. And back then, there was almost no vehicle traffic of any consequence. So the entire beach of Kotzebue had what we call inyisels, that is, fish and meat racks, mm-hmm. where we caught seals and beluga and other mammals of that nature, we would handle them and treat them, butcher them, dry them, cook them. So in that particular shot, we were actually cooking the muktuk, which is the delicacy, the skin with a little bit of blubber.
Mm-hmm.
And as you can see, that big dog there was hungrier than heck.
Your husky is right in front of you, and he'd like a nibble.
That's right. And I think she had a litter of pups somewhere nearby, and I think she was really hungry. So right behind me was the beluga meat that was drying, and then we'd mm-hmm. cook it, and then we'd store it in the seal oil. And then just above, I think, are some stomachs of a beluga that we used as well because they were translucent. And so that was a different world, and our people still depend on the fisheries and other mammals for not only their survival, but that's the kind of food that they actually prefer over store-bought food.
Dermot Cole in Fairbanks, when you first arrived in 1974, you were 21 years old, and an awful lot of people were coming up from the lower 48, especially you know, big equipment operators and Teamsters and everybody else from Oklahoma and Montana, but really all over. I was up there then as well. I remember the streets of Fairbanks were just full of people looking for those super high-paying pipeline jobs, and some were lucky enough to get them. I ended up up in Dead Horse and then later working on one of the Doyon oil exploration projects in Native American land. Maybe Willie had set that up. But was that a giant turning point for Alaska? Must have been that summer when oil and the pipeline was suddenly just looming over everything, Dermot.
Well, Tom, it certainly was. The Alaska changed so drastically in the 1970s because of the boom to build the Trans-Alaska Oil Pipeline. Fairbanks was a very overcrowded place. In fact, there's one famous story of 40 people living in a two-bedroom house, you know, basically with cots spread throughout the entire the entire building.
Yeah.
And you know, the phone system didn't work. The utilities were all overburdened, and the town was really under tremendous stress. And a lot of facilities were built, and they all came online after the pipeline was over, and the population had declined somewhat. Today, the population of the Fairbanks area is about at least double what it was back then. And the town seems it's rather prosperous in most ways. Alaska does not have a statewide income tax or a statewide property tax. There are local property taxes. The communities are doing quite well overall, I'd say. The one big kind of threat looming in the future is Alaska is heavily dependent on oil, and as you mentioned before, the oil price is down substantially.
Mm-hmm.
And our economy depends on it, and
that's got to hurt.
While we do have tens of billions of savings, that puts Alaska in a better position than many other states. The notion of building a diversified economy for the future, that's one of the constant themes of the last 50 years, and it remains a big challenge.
Does oil help or hurt? I mean, once you've got oil, we hear about the resource curse. You've got oil, so why do anything else?
That's true, and people have compared Alaska to many other regions around the world that have been unable to diversify their economies. I mean, in truth, the Alaska economy has consisted of oil, mainly, and or perhaps secondly, federal spending, thanks to the work of Senator Ted Stevens, who over the decades he was his top priority was to get. To get projects for Alaska, and his view was that Alaska was a brand new state; it didn't have facilities that other states had. Now, granted, the states with much larger populations didn't quite see the situation the way he did, but that has long been the argument that Alaska deserves this sort of special treatment because it has, you know, just come fairly recently to the Union. And needs to catch up with the other states. You know, I might just say one more thing about fishing. We mentioned that the statewide harvest in 2008 was about 150 million salmon.
Mm-hmm.
Now that was the that was down from 2007, but it still was maybe the 16th largest catch since Alaska became a state. And I would agree with Willie that we do have a pretty good state management systems in place, and there are cycles.
Cycles, but we know it's not all a bed of roses there. We've talked with Native Alaskans over time here, describing the coast kind of falling away where they are, and it can't be easy with federal spending. What under the pressures it's going to be under soon for a state, and now, of course, Ted Stevens out on those corruption charges. Let me get a call from Diane in Lexington, Massachusetts. Diane, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a problem because it seems like they're talking about all these incredible things. But I have friends who live in Alaska and have lived there and say that the poverty is huge. It's a huge problem. I want them to address the fact that it's got one of the highest incidents of spousal abuse in the country. They have no legislation perfect for kids to get kids educated. They have all this money, and they are spending it on, I don't know, but it's not being spent on the people. And this is, you know, from hearing from people that live there. and talk about this and how hard it is for the people.
Diane, let us pick it straight up. Dermot Cole, how about it? It's not all grand nature and lovely mountain skylines. What about the tough side of life in Alaska?
Well, there are high rates of alcoholism, you know, domestic violence, and other problems. I mean, there are social problems in every state. Alaska is certainly not immune to that. But I would challenge the idea about education spending, at least on the primary school and secondary school. Alaska does invest quite heavily in education. There's a good argument to be made that maybe it's not investing enough in preparing our students for the future. But you know, it's certainly not really deficient in that regard. I'm not sure. You might ask Willie what he thinks about that.
Willie, what do you think? You know, Diane says she's got friends and they know the tough side of life there. It's not all paradise. That's for sure.
Oh, for sure. There are problems. If life is difficult, it's probably more difficult by a long shot out in the 200 villages scattered around the state, and those are mostly Athabascan, Inupiat, you know, Yupik, Tlingit people that live in these places. And we have been in a transition for many years. And because of the repression of language, of customs, of religion, of art over the past century or so, you know, there are problems. And that's not to say that people haven't worked very, very hard to try to accommodate themselves actually to statehood, to a changed political environment. I think overall, statehood gave Alaska more local control. Before that, we were more or less the handmaiden of the Secretary of Interior, who essentially controlled the landmass.
And the military in the Cold War, all those stations up there.
That's right. And so statehood provided revenues to Alaska to deal with many of these issues. And back when I was a kid, we were dying of tuberculosis. You know, we had chicken pox, smallpox, all kinds of, and no health care. And we have that now, and we have access to education. I had to go 5,000 miles away to go to boarding school for high school. So, and we have schools in our communities now. So there are, yes, there's problems, but on the other hand, it's a lot better than it was when I was a kid. There are some safety nets we didn't have back then.
Let me get one more call from Jane in Harvard, Massachusetts. Jane, you're on the air.
Hi. I lived in Alaska for 5 years, back starting in 79, and I'm just calling to maybe, and your guests could do this better than I can, but just celebrate it a bit. It is, I don't think the people in the lower 48 can conceive of just what a different place it is and what the extremes it carries. And now you have to correct me, but as I recall, when I moved to Anchorage had, like, on the one hand, the highest per capita population of people with advanced degrees in the country. Now, I could be misquoting that, but that was at least a statistic.
I was thinking more of moose and bear in the street than...
Well, and that's exactly, and that's it. And yet, at there is no question, at 6 o'clock in the morning, you could drive down a little bit on the outskirts of Fifth Avenue. You could see Mount Moose. You could drive around in Seward, and you could see bears. And I don't know, Dermot, I remember that the Anchorage Times used to do this, and I'm sure Fairbanks papers do it even more, but the Anchorage Times, like, once a summer would run a contest for people to submit their articles about bear encounters. And so you would read about these people who were camping in the middle of nowhere and who talked their way out of an attack.
Sing to the bear. Jane, our time is short here. It's coming to a close, unfortunately. Dermot Cole, Jane asked for kind of one last picture there of the romance of Alaska that struck her. I guess it must have bit you, despite all the problems. 1974, you came here. We are 2009. You're still there, Dermot.
Well, I love living here. Alaska is a wonderful place, you get a chance to meet some tremendous individuals. Willie Hensley is one of them. the, I love everything about it.
Well, that's very broad-minded of you, sir, and we're grateful to each of you for spending some time with us today as Alaska celebrates 50 years of statehood. Dermot Cole, author of North to the Future in Fairbanks today. Dermot, thank you so much for being with us. It was really a pleasure having you.
Thanks, Tom.
And Willie Hensley, author of 50 Miles from Tomorrow. Willie, good luck with everything. Thank you for joining us. We'll be watching from down here. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
Listeners, thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.